Now, during that time, a lot has happened, hasn't it, Jess?
Yeah.
Because we have a guest in the studio, Mr. David Goody. Hello.
Good evening.
Welcome back to Studio One.
Oh, pleasure to be back here.
Now, it was the Wednesday wake up that you came on before.
Yep.
We decided to give up getting up that early.
A very sensible idea.
And so hopefully it suits you a lot better as well.
It does indeed. I have run away from bath time tonight, it has to be said. But as well as being on the Wednesday Wake Up, you were good enough last year to play my Christmas song at that point, which was The Elves of Earlsdon, which I did have my, at that point, 1.5-year-old very excitedly dancing around the room, going, "Daddy's on the radio, Daddy's
oh,
on the radio,
that's
Daddy's
so
on
cute.
The radio."
See, that is what it's all about. I'm playing that just in the background. Now, do you want to just say to our listeners who you are.
Okay, so my name's David Goody. I bill myself as a purveyor of absurd comic songs. So I like writing about silly things, like the idea of when Tinky Winky got sacked from the Teletubbies, he came back postal worker style and took out his vengeance on the people around. I write songs about kind of... I did a cover of Khaleesi's Milkshake, but from the perspective of actually doing it as a song about making milkshakes, Delia Smith style. That kind of general approach to things.
Now, Jodie and I, actually, we saw you on one of your sets at Godiva this year.
Yeah.
Brilliant. And I was
had a lot of... In fact, I did an extended set with a mid-set falconry display. I'm not quite sure how this worked out. But basically, I started performing. The way they scheduled things, I had to stop partway through. Someone came out and then did a full falconry display, and I came back on afterwards. I felt I should have actually had, like, a cape and gone, like, full Rick Wakeman prog kind
That's
of thing.
That's brilliant.
But, you rarely get anything that kind of tops... I mean, Ronan Keating did not have a falconry display in the middle of his set. I mean, I felt I was pretty much headlining the whole weekend at that.
So I think you have. You've definitely topped Ronan Keaton, Neville Staple. Who else was on? Editors. None of them had a falconry display in the middle of their show. You had special effects.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's how good it was.
Didn't need dry ice or anything like that, and it didn't attack any of the children either, which was absolutely brilliant. You're always slightly worried with a wild bird at that point.
Now... As is in the background, is the Elves of Earlsdon. Mm-hmm. So it's very local based. Yeah. You're an Earlsdon chap?
I aspire to be Earlsdon. I'm actually Cannon Park. I'm down by the university in the Tesco.
There's nothing wrong with Cannon Park area. That's where I live.
I wouldn't say so either. But yeah, I mean, in terms of doing Christmas songs, basically there was a friend of mine who a little over 4 years back started badgering me into writing Christmas songs. He's the kind of person that gets to about September time and he starts watching Elf on repeat at that point. And he's pretty much committed from that stage in. So about 4 years ago, I wrote a Christmas song called Spawn End Santa.
Okay.
I struggled to find things that rhymed with Santa, it has to be said. It was the Fanta, Decanter, Banter, Specials bass player, Horace Panter. and went from that. And actually, that did really well. It actually led to me meeting Horace Panter and him filming something to go on the video, because he's actually a lovely chap and he's still kind of country-based. And then I just got the bug, so I kept writing more and more Christmas songs. And I've now actually got an album's worth. I've got 14 original Christmas songs, terrifyingly enough, of which I've put a new single out this year, the album itself, but the single's called Rudy the Two-Tone Reindeer, so I've actually kind of gone full Specials at this point. And actually within the song it references 14 different special songs within there, so if you want a game with this one, if you are eagle-eared enough, you can pick up as I say, the names of 14 different special songs, which are delicately threaded through the whole narrative of it. Now, there was some speculation in the studio here of whether we could actually name 14 special songs just off the bat.
Yeah, to be honest, if you could...
I think Rich could.
I probably could now. I haven't done it on purpose,
CD
so we could actually do a tick list of which ones are on
there.
I think I could probably name 14 in total.
Yeah.
The good news is Richard has just held up the box set of the first two Specials album, so, and I don't think I've referenced anything off the third album.
So not from In the Studio?
There's nothing from In the Studio on there, though I think I have referenced a B-side at one point, just to be really tricksy. If you want to
Can I ask why? Or is I was trying to be clever, because there's a B-side called Why.
Ah, right.
See? Yeah. No, and it wasn't that.
No, I don't think it even has the word "why" in there. Who knows?
You might have accidentally
references without even knowing.
Well, shall we play the
Spot the Special song?
Spot the Special song. I think it's only polite that you introduce your own track.
Okay, so I'm David Goody, and this is my 2018 Christmas single, Rudy the Two-Tone Reindeer.
Presence leading Santa's sleigh, who plays ska and reggae, not Michael Bublé. His nose isn't red, it's a classic two-tone, and he's more dangerous than the guns of Navarone. He steals the show every Christmas day. He's no monkey man at CNA. He's so infallible, he's almost papal, and he's the rudest boy since Neville Staple. The two-tone reindeer, Rudy. The two-tone reindeer. This Rudeer is out of jail. Like JB, he'll never fail. Rudy. The two-tone reindeer. Presents kids get must be undone. They get far too much, much too young. Well, Rudy's got a message. He makes gifts go astray before flogging them off on eBay. When Santa says, enjoy yourself, he'll party harder than any elf. Have a mistletoe snog, eat a whole Yule log, drink a pint of eggnog, and then do the dog, because he's Rudy. The two-tone reindeer, Rudy. The two-tone reindeer. He's out from Friday night to Saturday morning, delivering presents before day is dawning. Rudy. The two-tone reindeer. He won't prance in a club like this. All the boys are stags, and the deer smell just like Rudy. The two-tone reindeer, Rudy. The two-tone reindeer. It's up to you if you believe the hype, but this reindeer's no stereotype. Rudy. The two-tone reindeer.
That was Rudy the Two-Tone Reindeer.
It was indeed. How do you think you did then, Rich?
I think I got 14.
Interestingly enough, I think you did, but there were two that you didn't mention in there, and potentially two that I didn't spot first time round. So there was a line about when day is dawning, which you took as dawning of a new era.
Yeah.
Which I hadn't counted as one of the references.
Yeah.
There was, I forget what the other one is that you mentioned partway through that I kind of thought, hadn't actually got that down as a reference. The other two in there were a reference to JB, as in Sock It To Him, JB.
Yep.
And also the other one was, got the other one you didn't get now. You got It's Up To You.
Yeah.
Yeah, there was one other in there. So
oh,
that's
brilliant.
The one I know, but you did brilliantly.
See, I heard you even say one. JB.
Yeah.
As in John Bradbury. So, I love it.
Yeah.
So what kind of inspired you to do,
I think
this kind of music in the first place? Like, the comedy kind of elements of it?
Well, it's a combination of things. I mean, firstly, there's a certain survival instinct. Because actually, it's one of the great things there is around commentary. There's a lot of really great musicians around the place, performing in various places. And you go along to an open mic night, and there are the most brilliant singers, and there are the most brilliant guitarists. And I kind of go, I can't sing as well as them, and I can't play guitar as well as them. So I decided the best way to put myself on a level playing field is to do something that you can't compare in any single way with what they're doing. So you've got someone doing a brilliant version of, I don't know, Hallelujah or Titanium or something like that on an acoustic guitar. And then I'll turn up with like a ukulele or a weird three-string guitar or something like that, and sing a version of the J-Lo song, but go, don't be fooled by the socks that I've got. I've got it in something like that. At which point you kind of people go, right, okay, well it's entirely different. I just sort of started messing around with stuff like that and really enjoyed it, basically.
So excellent.
If I'm to be bold here,
yeah,
David, you are like then Coventry's answer to Tim Minchin or Victoria Wood.
If you want to put me in that way, then I absolutely adore Tim Minchin. In fact, my daughter is named Matilda, so you know you can do a link in there as well. But yeah, I mean, I think Tim Minchin is absolutely genius, and I think one of the great things with a lot of the Tim Minchin stuff is it's done absolutely deadpan. There's no kind of mugging for the gag or something like that. And it's one of the things I've found with doing a lot of these songs, particularly when you're performing them live, you have to do them with absolute conviction. There's no sense of kind of, you know, a nod and wink to the crowd or something like that.
No sort of cheapness to
absolutely.
Do with any of it. It's just straight as a die.
At the point that I sing straight out of Earlston, I mean, I'm straight out of Earlston. You know, there's no kidding around anything like that. And that's actually kind of what's driven it. And there's so many different things that inspire me one way or another. I mean, Tim Minchin's a great example. There's a great guy from the 60s known as Tom Lehrer, who did a lot of piano-based songs. Most people know him for this song where you list off all the elements one after another. But he's done great songs like Poisoning Pigeons in the Park and things like that. And they're just the most brilliant lyrics. Like every single lyric is perfectly tuned, perfectly kind of phrased within it, and they're just the most perfect little 90-second sort of 2-minute-long song. So yeah, it's all been a combination of things like that.
So when you're talking about lyrics, where do you find them? Do you sit down and go, right, I'm going to write this lyric, or can they come to you in a car? Like you said, you're missing out on bath time tonight, where it just comes to you like that?
Yeah, most of the stuff does just absolutely come randomly. I think most of the time it's actually really important not to try and force it, not to sit down there and kind of go, right, what's a list of subjects that I could do songs about? It just has to be something that weirdly occurs at any point. Sometimes it is kind of riffing off other songs. So there was one point I did a song that was Amy Winehouse's Guide to the Seaside. And, you know, they tried to make me go to Skegness, but I said, no, no, no. And it just went through my head at one point. I went, you know what, there's a song in there. So generally it is just kind of like random ideas that most people would dismiss as being something stupid. I kind of go, right, I can work a song around this.
Oh, I love it. Now, I've got to say, I'd say you're largely responsible for me picking my ukulele up again and actually deciding to learn it this time. Because I've had one for years and never really learned to.
Yeah. I think ukuleles are brilliant. Apparently they do them a lot in schools now for people learning instruments, which is really good, because a badly played ukulele doesn't sound that bad, but a badly played recorder, my word, that is hell.
Yeah.
I mean, I think they're lovely little instruments because it's sort of 4 strings rather than 6 strings, and they're a relatively small thing. You can pick up a lot of little chords, and I love kind of the little ukulele groups you get out of it it's sort of communal things. Everyone comes along, brings a little ukulele, back room of a pub or something like that, and just kind of plays and sings along to the stuff. I think, and I also found when I started doing stuff on the ukulele, it's a very kind of joyful and interesting instrument. It doesn't have much sustain on it. So actually, it helps if you don't have a particularly tuneful voice, as I don't, to the fact that you're not trying to kind of sing and harmonise along to, you know, a wonderfully kind of resonant guitar sound. You've just got something that's going ding a ding a ding a ding a ding a ding in the background. So I think they're absolutely great things.
No, I totally agree. Absolutely. I think it's you and George Harrison have kind of like spurred me to do that. So yeah. No, obviously he didn't personally.
And of course there's a wonderful thing that George Harrison always took 2 ukuleles with him wherever he went.
Yeah.
Just so that actually if he sat down with someone, it's kind of like, I've got a ukulele, you've got a ukulele, let's go and play some ukuleles together. And it was interesting when they did the concert for George Harrison.
Yes.
A few people had a go at Paul McCartney because he did a version of Something and he started playing on the ukulele, and a lot of people kind of went, well, he's just kind of taking the mickey, he's not doing the song seriously, not understanding that that's the kind of thing that George Harrison would have.
Well, he even says at the beginning, he said, like, recently he'd been at Georgia. I mean, when was that, 2001?
It would have been something.
And and he said they'd get the ukuleles out, and he wanted to try that, and he loved it.
Yeah.
So there we are. Now, The next track we're playing of yours, and then we'll have a quick chat after that one about how people can listen back to these and get the album, etc. This is a medley.
It is. So so what I decided is, so as I said, there's 14 tracks on this album across a wide range of subjects, everything from Noddy Holder to Brussels sprouts to you know, you name it, it's in there, basically. So what I thought I'd do is just kind of edit together a little medley of different songs within this. Basically, it's akin to going on to, you know, whatever download store you want and pressing the button where it gives you 30 seconds of each of the tracks. But, you know, joyfully picked across about six of the tracks on there. And it starts off with a little classic Christmas story for us all.
Lovely. So here it is, Christmas medley.
It was the night before Christmas when all through the house people played with their smartphone and clicked with a mouse. The internet was searched with diligence and care in hopes that an early start to the sales would be there.
Here's some Kanye West, here's some Kanye West, and I've got presents to divest. This Christmas will be the best. It's manifest because I'm Kanye West. Old Saint Nick is out of date and his present wrapping is third rate. A lady down the law to all my homies. Santa can't control his flying ponies. So forget the grotto, I'm from the ghetto and my little helpers wear 10-inch stilettos. Hey Jay-Z, what you got to say? Got 99 problems, but Christmas ain't one.
Virgin Trains, yet again delayed. It's no fun for anyone to travel this way. Hey, Virgin Trains, frequently delayed. It costs a ton, we hate ransom, but we do it anyway.
The humble sprout is key to Yuletide festivities. Amongst the trimmings, they look the part, even if they make you fart. We've been told over and over, start boiling them in October, but there is a way to make them better. Pan-fry them with a bit of pancetta, cos Christmas isn't Christmas without Brussels sprouts. Everything is ruined if you leave them out. Christmas isn't Christmas without Brussels sprouts. They tie things together like festive grout. Ho, 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 hee. The elves of Ulston sing merrily. Ho, 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 hee. With fair trade baubles on a higa tree. On and on goes Spawned Santa, the funkiest man since Horace Panter. You don't mess with Spawned Santa, giving gifts and banter at a canter. On and on goes Spawned Santa, the funkiest man since Horace Panter. Don't lead sherry for Spawned Santa, he prefers a decanter filled with Fanta.
That was brilliant.
And that was pretty much every entry in a thesaurus that rhymes with Santa. I did have to sit down and work through all that. It was a brilliant idea until I realised that maybe there are better words. I'm never going to write a song about purple, because nothing rhymes with purple. You're just in trouble there.
What is it with colours? Because orange is the same thing.
Orange is a bit of a struggle as well. Yeah. Yellow's quite good, which is why Chris Martin did kind of, you know, yellow with them. You've got loads of stuff to go out with that. Green you're okay with, red you're okay with, but, you know, orange, purple, you know, there's a real struggle at that
Very
point.
Unique.
You saying that, interestingly enough, I don't think Chris actually rhymed anything with yellow.
Ooh.
In the song.
Oh.
I think you're probably right. I mean, going back again to kind of why I write the songs, is one of the things I quite like about songs is songs which are clearly about something that, you know, right, this is what the song means, it's about this, that, or the other around. It's one of the things, like, for example, I really love Madness, a lot of their songs. And if you listen to those, they're all distinctly about something. At the end of, you know, listening to It Must Be Love or Our House or something like that, or Driving in My Car, you know exactly what they're singing about. I dare anyone to actually tell me what yellow is about.
It's a song about songwriting. You're still yellow, yeah, your skin and bones turn into something beautiful. So obviously it's the makings of a song.
Oh.
Really?
Yeah, Chris Martin actually said that.
Okay, well, fine. There's me told right there.
Yeah.
I've listened to that song quite a number of times and kind of thought, well, it's a well-delivered set of metaphors, but it's really relevant. But the interesting thing is that the song can be that successful, and I would wager that, like myself, the vast majority of people have no idea what it's actually about.
Bohemian Rhapsody is the classic of that.
There was a Queen documentary, it was a rerun they put on TV recently, and they had a whole bunch of Oxford academics sitting around dissecting the lyric and trying to work out kind of exactly what it meant. And there were some bits where they were just going, and that's because that rhymes fairly well with that.
It's a bit like when the Beatles released I'm the Walrus, and everybody was like, what does that mean? Who is the Walrus? What does this mean? It was that sort of thing.
Yeah.
There we are. Absolutely brilliant. So how can people listen to your music, full stop, and the album, etc.?
So basically, in terms of all the stuff I've got, you can find it on all the usual download and streaming services online. There's also videos for a lot of the songs, including for Rudy the Two-Tone Reindeer on YouTube. So basically, if you go and type in David Goody, if you type in Spawn and Santa, if you type in the Elves of Earlsdon, you type in Rudy the Two-Tone Reindeer, you will quickly come across this treasure trove of stuff, and you can delve into that as deep as you want. I'm now up to 4 albums worth of stuff. At some point, I'm going to stop coming up with crazy ideas of stuff.
Yep.
But I've already got about 5 things written out for the next album.
Keep it going.
You could release some like deluxe editions. With the extra tracks on.
Yeah.
Well, actually, here's a weird thing with all these albums I've got into. I've just got stuck into my head that my album must have 14 tracks on it. Not any less, not any more. And when I was doing this one, it's kind of like, right, I need to get another 4 tracks done because I'm not releasing 10 tracks on this album because that's just not trying.
They'll think you've peaked. You know, so.
They're short songs as well. If it's under 14 tracks, it only becomes like a 25-minute album, and that way you're not really getting value for money either.
Well, I was going to ask, if you were stuck in the North Pole for a year, like Santa is, what album would you take with you?
One single album with you. Oh, now that's a really good one to go at. I think actually, so there's always the temptation to kind of do like the Alan Partridge style answer of just kind of saying the best of the Beatles or something like that. But that always kind of feels a little bit cheating. Actually, I will go for something at this point that's a little bit left field, but I always like kind of coming back to, which is actually Expecting to Fly by the Blue Tones. Just one of those albums that I find kind of really nice and comforting, and I think has a lot of nice depth to it. It's absolutely one of those questions you ask me. A different day, you would have got an entirely different album every single time.
One of those, isn't it?
Yeah.
Excellent. Have you got any gigs coming up? Actually, just quickly.
I haven't got anything lined up at the moment. I'm going to be I may well turn up slightly guerrilla gig style around the place. But I'll be out and gigging again in the new year. So I'm most frequently seen at Millsy's on a Monday night doing the open mic there. I'll be out and about in the new year.
Excellent. Well, David Goody, thank you so much for coming back.
Thank you so much.
Hopefully, we get you back in again next Christmas.
I'll see you for that point. We're starting the work on Christmas album 2.
Exactly.
This time it's personal.
That's brilliant. And I'm going to say, we'll post all the stuff, like links, etc. I don't think you mentioned this specials track, which is what I'm going to play now. So I will thank you for coming on, and we'll see you soon. This is The Specials with You're Wondering Now.